Then we start here with two lines from the bottom, and the bottom of Nun Vav Amud Bet. Gemara here is continuing to discuss Peah, which was the last thing that we mentioned in the Mishnah. It says, Tarubanan, Berishona, Ayu Notnim Peah, Lefet, Vilakruv. In the beginning, they used to give Peah from turnips and from cabbage. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Af Lekflot. Rabbi Yossi adds in also leeks. Betani Yidoch, we have another Braita, Ayu Notnim Peah, Lefet, Vilakflot. They used to give Peah for turnips and leeks. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Af Lekruv. Also for cabbage. So Gemara says, Neima Tlata Tinae Habu. Let us assume here that there are three Tanaim. There's a three-way machloket. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon agree, which is that they have peah for all three of the items. In both instances, two items are mentioned in the Mishnah by the Tanakhama, and then Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yossi mentions the third item. So if you take an aggregate, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon are saying all three of them, which would mean that they agree. That's one opinion. The second opinion will be the Tanakhama of Rabbi Yossi, who thinks lefet and kruv. And the third opinion will be the Tanakhama of Rabbi Shimon, who says peah for lefet and kflot. So that would be three different positions with regards to peah. Gemara says, lo, trei tanae havu. There are really only two tanaim here. The Tanakhama de Rabbi Shimon, hainu Rabbi Yossi. The Tanakhama Rabbi Shimon is Rabbi Yossi. Tanakhama de Rabbi Yossi, hainu Rabbi Shimon. And the Tanakhama Rabbi Yossi's din is Rabbi Shimon. Umay af. Then what does the af mean in each of these cases? Akamaito. It's going back on the first item mentioned in both Braitot, meaning that lefet is the item that's mentioned in both Braitot, and that's common between all of them. Everybody believes that lefet has peah. The only question is, what else goes with lefet? So in the first Braita, the Tanakhama says, who is Rabbi Shimon, says lefet and kruv. Those are the two items. Rabbi Yossi Omer, af lekflot, af is going back on lefet. So Rabbi Yossi says, lefet and kvot, those are the float, those are the two items, meaning turnips and leeks. Then you go to Tanya Idoch, the second braita is, you know, peah, the lefet and kvot, that is Rabbi Yossi, that's Rabbi Yossi's opinion, who says leeks and turnips are peah. And then Rabbi Shimon, off the kruv again is referencing back to lefet. So it means lefet and kruv, which is the same as the Tanakhama of Rabbi Yossi, or the Tanakhama of Rabbi Yossi is Rabbi Shimon. So there are really only two opinions here, and you just have to know to read that the af is not referencing both items in the Tanakhama statement, only the first item lefet in the statement of the Tanakhama. Tan Rabbanan, Ben Bohiyan, Natan Peah, Liyarek. In the Tosefta it says the son of Bohiyan gave Peah for Yerek, which is something that we mentioned in the Mishnah is very problematic. So Baviv, Umatza'an Laniyim Shayutunim Yerek. He came, his father showed up on the scene, and realizes that the Neim are about to walk off with all of these vegetables that they thought they were peah. V'omdim al petach hagina, they're about to exit from the garden. Marlehem, banai, ishlichum aleichem, if you drop what you're holding, v'ani noten lechem kiflaim bimu'usar, and I'll give you double the volume from something that already has trumot and masro taken off of it. He obviously understands what the problem is, that peah, which is given incorrectly, is really tevel. And since it's tevel, he's giving something that's not mi'usar. So he basically, to encourage them, entice them to drop what they took, so that he can rectify the situation. He says, I'm going to give you double of items that already have masrot and trumot taken off of them, and you just give me the yarek back. Lo, mipnei she'ini tzara. It's not because I'm miserly. Mipnei she'amru chachamim et nonim peya liyarek. But the reason is because the chachamim said that you don't give peya from the yarek. Gemara says, "Lamalei the memra lehu." Why do you have to tell him the reason? Lo mipnei she'eini tzara. Why do you have to say that I'm not miserly? Because he is giving them double. So why would they ever think that he's miserly? He's offering them a deal they can't refuse, which is basically, I'm going to give you double the volume of what you're carrying out right now. So why would they ever think he's a miser if he's offering them double volume? So ki eche delo limro dechuye kamedachilon. So the aniyim don't say he's just trying to push us off. He's trying to just get us to drop what we have here, and then he's really not going to give us double. So he explains the reason behind his offer to them, so they understand why he's serious about his offer. That he's not just trying to get them to drop whatever they have, and later on he's not going to give them what he said. Rather, he explained to them, I need you to drop the yerek, because the yerek is problematic. It's not mi'usar. And so here, the father, Bohiyan, understood that what we saw in our Mishnah, that Einot Nim Pereya Yerek, and therefore he's correcting the mistake that his son had made. Here Tosafot asks, and this is where I had mentioned to you before, Tosafot says, okay, fine, so he made a mistake. Just let's say it's Hefker. If it's hefker, you're also patur, mimsar, and truma. So why can't we just say it's hefker? Forget that it's peah. But Tosfot brings one reason. He says, it's only considered hefker when it's hefker both to aniyim and ashirim. If you're just hefker the aniyim, that's not considered to be hefker. So therefore, it doesn't qualify as hefker over here. That's one answer that Tosafot gives. Then he gives a second answer. He says, even according to Beit Shammai, who says hefker the aniyim is hefker, he says over here, it's hefker betaut. It was a mistaken hefker. He really didn't mean to be mafkirit. It was an accident because he made a mistake about giving payah from Yerek. So his intention was not to do this. Okay, so the lefet and kruv and all those items are items that store. They are unusual in the yerek. That's one possibility, is that you're dealing with root vegetables. Not kruv, but lefet and kaflot are root vegetables, and therefore they're different, as opposed to regular vegetables, which they could not store. Root vegetables do store, and therefore they do have a din in peah. That's one possibility. The other possibility is barishona, hayunotim peah. There it says in one of them, it says barishona. By the kruv one, it says in the beginning, they used to give. So it might have been that that was, in the beginning, they gave peah until they realized that it was problematic, and it wasn't necessary to give yerek. So I don't know which way, you could explain it one of the two ways. One is that because the root vegetables are different, and they do store, and they have a different than vegetables, or that barishona means that that was what they did, but it wasn't necessarily the right practice. So that's how you have to explain the brightot that mentioned prior to this, the yerek that was given, or peah that was given from the yerek. In the beginning, they used to put the skins, the hides of the kodashim in the beta parve. They used to store them there. By the evening time, they used to divide them up by the beit av. So it works in the mishmarot. The mishmarot are the cycles that the Kohanim come up to serve in the Mikdash. There are 24 mishmarot, which go through on a cycled basis. They take turns week by week serving in the Mikdash. Ish mishmar is broken up into six batei avot, meaning six family units. Those six family units, each one of them served one day of the 6 days of the week, and then all of them together served on Shabbat. So that is the batei avot. Now, what the Kohanim, on the day that they served, are entitled to all the karbanot that are brought on that day. Basically, the way the deal worked was that the mishmarot agreed to divide up the karbanot in the way that when you were the mishmar there, your mishmar would take all that the Kohanim were entitled to. Kohanim are entitled to all the kodshei kodoshim. They're entitled to the meat from those items, except for an olah. And then from all of the kodshei kodoshim, they're entitled to the skins, even including the olah. They get the skins from that. And then from kodshim kalim, they get their matanot or manot from that, plus the minachot. So now, the Kohanim have this right. They also, within the mishmar, divided or subdivided into batei avot, into the family units. The way they set it up was that whichever family unit worked that day, they were entitled to everything that took place or was brought that day. Even though it would turn out that it was slightly uneven. Because on one day you might have more voluntary offerings that came on that day, more individuals that came up on that day. So it doesn't necessarily work out to be exactly equal or fair, but it was the easiest way to divide it up. Otherwise they have to wait and they have to put it together and have to throw lots. So here they divide it up day by day. So same with the skins. What it says is they took the skins from the whole day, they put them into the Beit Parve, and then at night, the Anche Beit Av, the family that worked that day, came, and they divided them up. The problem was that the bullies, the strong men, the strong armed their way in, and took it all by force. So they weren't able to overcome the problem of there were people who had more power, and we're talking about physical power here, and they basically by force took all of the hides, and they didn't distribute them to the Beit Av. So in order to avoid that problem, they decided to, hitkinu, shumachalkim otomi erev Shabbat, erev Shabbat. They changed the process by which, instead of dividing it up family-wise, they're going to divide it up for the whole mishmar. Now with the meat or the flesh, you can't do that, because it's going to go bad. You can't hold it over until the end of the week and have a problem of notar, you're going to have a problem of it going bad. It has to just be eaten on the spot. But with regards to the hides, you could keep them over. So they basically left them over until Friday, Erev Shabbat, and said, let's bring the whole Mishmar together. If we have numbers, if we have more people there, there's less likelihood to be that there's going to be some bullies or powerful people that are going to grab the Orot because you're dealing with larger numbers. You're dealing with the whole Mishmar. So in order to rectify the problem of people edging in on the skins, they said, we're going to wait and divide it up evenly according to the whole Mishmar. So now the Achi and Kugu Mishmarot. So then at that point the whole Mishmar comes, Vishaklan Bahadadi, and then they'll take it together. But the problem then was not those that were powerful, but those of stature were then taking them. Because they said, oh, this belongs to the head of the Mishmar as being the people of power, but people of power in the form of stature, not in strength. So they're running into the same problem again, which is that it was an unfair distribution of the hides. Amdu ba'alim v'gdishum l'shamayim. So basically they got together and they said, we got to rectify this problem, is that we're going to be makdish them to Shemayim. We're going to be makdish all the orot ahead of time to say that every orot belongs to a Kodosh Baruch Hu. Now again, this is an interesting note. I've mentioned this numerous times, which is that here these people are, people have no problem, in a sense, stealing from others. They're willing to either strong arm in and take the hides, or they're willing because of their stature to take it and not divide it evenly. As soon as they're makdishim l'shamayim, don't touch them. This idea that ben adam l'makom or hektesh has this certain amount of status that they won't touch them, even though they're willing to steal directly from other people and take what doesn't belong to them. Anyway, they're makdishim l'shamayim, and that solves the problem because nobody's going to take them now anymore. They're all kodesh l'ashem. So amro lo ayu yamim u'atim, after they put this into place, they were, you know, not so long, where they covered the entire Heichal with squares, tiles of gold. They were one amah by one amah, these tiles, the thickness of a gold coin. So basically what they did was they monetized, they sold the hides, and inside the hides, that money, they monetized the hides, that money they donated to the Mikdash, because they were Magdishtim. So with that money, they went and bought these gold squares, or they made these gold squares, and they used them to decorate the inside of the Eichal, or the Regel. Hayu makaplim otam. On the Regel, they used to fold them up. Umenichim otam agav male harabait. They used to lay them out, or display them on the stairs entering up into harabait. Kadeshu ole regalim ro'im shumlachtam na'a. So that they would see how nice the work was, the beautiful work that was done and donated to the Mikdash. Vein ba delem. And they have no delem. The other option here is dofi. Rashi says the word delem means dofi. But they had no defects in them. That they were perfect and beautiful. And this is what was done with the money that was donated to the Mikdash. Displayed them out in front so that the Olei Regalim would understand the beauty of the Heichal. Obviously they couldn't go into the Heichal. They couldn't see inside the Heichal. This was a way to bring the Heichal out to them to show them how much or how beautiful the Heichal was. It seems like not. They're not Kodesh in the sense that they can't be taken out of the Mikdash. They're only Kodesh that they belong to Hekdesh. So to take them out of the Eichal seems to be that it wasn't a problem. This isn't part of the essential building or structure of the Eichal. It's only a decorative in nature. And the Mishnayot discussed the same thing with the Menorah and the Shulchan, that they brought them out so that the Amei Aretz or the Olei Regel could see them. You know, there was this idea of taking what was in the Eichal, which was quote-unquote private and not visible to the common man, to take it out on the regal so they understood, you know, what type of beauty was here. And it was, that was the case if you look in Josephus when he describes the Mikdash and he describes the Romans eventually coming into the Mikdash and destroying it, that they were really not so keen on destroying the Mikdash because it was a beautiful, it was an unbelievable building, a gorgeous building. And they felt that even though they were in a war or in a battle, they understood the beauty and the significance of the Mikdash and were willing at first to let it go and not destroy it. And when they enter it, they realized the tremendous beauty or the amount of gold and the loot that basically they carried off from there, which was unbelievable. All right, Tana, Abba Shalomer, Korot Shel Shikma Hayu Bericho, Vayu Balei Zrot Notim Otan Bizroa. There were these boards of the Shikma, of the sycamore in Yericho. And what ended up happening again was the strong men or the bullies used to come in and take them forcefully. They went ahead and they were Magdish on the Shem Shemayim. So now that was the background to the story in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, it was the children of those people who had been Magdish, the sycamores and the charuv to the Mikdash. They wanted to take off the Gamziot, the gross on them. So here's the background to that story. Why were they Magdish these items to the Mikdash? Why were they giving the Korot to Mikdash? The answer was that they had them and they weren't benefiting from them because of these people who were basically walking off with the korot or forcing themselves upon the people and taking the korot against their will. So in order to avoid that problem, once again, they makdish it, which solves the problem. Again, an amazing contrast in that these people are willing to take them by force, but as soon as it's hektesh, they won't touch it. And that's the background to why these children all have these trees around that are all Kodesh in Yericho. So now it says, Alehem, Vyalka Yotzevehem, on these type of individuals and people similar to him, Amar Abashul ben Botnit, Mishum Abba Yosef, ben Chanin, Oili mi Beit Baitus, Oili mi Alatan. So here the Gemara is going to go through a list of individuals who acted inappropriately. And we're going to say here that woe is to them and to their families because of what they did. So it's early me beit baitus. Woe to me from the family of baitus because of alatan. Alatan, Allah usually means their curses, but here Allah, alatan, as Rashi points out, is maklotehen, which is their staves or their staff they used to use to hit the people, in that they ran a dictatorship of a sense, that they were a very powerful family, and they ran the Migdash in a dictatorial way, because Beit Baitus was a Kohen Gadol. All these individuals that we are going to mention over here were individuals who were of power, of stature. Here he's a Kohen Gadol, and as Rashi says, that they had Abadim Chamsanim, V'choftim et ha'am. They had servants, or they had people who worked for them, that were thieves, robbers, and they used to beat the people up and take what was not rightfully theirs, whether it was from the other Kohanim, or whether it was from the Mezubchei HaZevach, they acted inappropriately. Oili mi Beit Chanin, oili mi L'chishatan. Woe is to me from Beit Chanin. Again, another family, a powerful family. And oili mi L'chishatan, as Rashi says, it's Yo'atzei Ra. They're bad advisors, they're evil advisors. Oili mi Beit Katros. Woe is to me from this family of Katros. Oili mi Kumusan. Woe is me from their quills. Over here, quills means that they wrote letters. Kotvim igrot ra'ah. They used to, whatever the letters were either letters of punishment, letters to the government officials or the political establishment that was negative for the people or the others who were not part of their family. Oile mi Beit Ishmael ben Paichi. Oile mi Egrofan. Woe is to me from the family of Ishmael ben Paichi. We're going to see in a second that Ishmael ben Paachi himself was a good person, but his family or his offspring were not such good people. So Oili mi Egrofan, Egrof is their fists, meaning that they were strong men, that they used to force their way into situations or take what was not rightfully theirs. Sheheim, Kohanim Gidolim, they are Kohanim Gadolim, Ubnehem Gizbarim, their children are the treasurers, Vechotnehem Markalin, and their sons-in-law are the trustees or the advisors to the Migdash. So here they basically have family control over everything that's going on in the Migdash, and they run things in a dictatorial way, in an unfair way. And their servants are the ones who go out and punish or hit the Am with their maklot, with their staves. The information here in the Gemara about Ishmael ben Faichi is actually corroborated in Josephus, in his Book of the Antiquities. There is a discussion there about Ishmael ben Fabi that was appointed by Agrippa Samelech, and there it discusses about the problem of his servants or those connected to the Kohen Gadol going out and forcing the people to give tithes and food to the Kohanim. So it actually corroborates what we see here in the Gemara. And later on, and the Gemara is going to discuss the personality of Ishmael ben Fabi, that he was a type of zealot, and that is also corroborated. He gets into an altercation later on in life with Agrippus about whether Agrippus HaMelech has the right to have his castle overlook or look into the Beit HaMikdash during the time of Avodah or not. And he petitions Nero, who is the Caesar at the time, who then agrees with the Kohen Gadol, Ishmael ben Fabi or Fabi, and tells Agrippus that he cannot have his palace look into the Beit HaMikdash. So here we have all these individuals who are in positions of power, and they abuse their positions of power. So this is, that statement that begins here is, woe is to me on these individuals and all like them. He's making the statement about the people of Yericho who had these strong men that came along and took what was not theirs necessarily. It wasn't rightfully theirs. They took the korot from the sycamore and the charuf, or in the case before we had with the Kohanim, who took the hides that didn't belong to them and they forced their way in. And here we have other lists of individuals or families that acted in a similar manner. They wielded such power in the Mikdash or within the political establishment that they made it almost impossible to conduct anything of normalcy within the Mikdash or maybe even within Yerushalayim, because they had so much power and that they maintained it within their family. Now this is Bayit Sheni. This would be Bayit Sheni because first of all the names are names that are of a Greek or Roman origin. So they're talking about individuals in Bayit Sheni. Number two is that you're talking about turnover here on the Kohanim Gedolim, which is also something that is in Bayit Sheni. Number three is that it's the Gemara itself is speaking, right? You have the Gemara or the Tanaim speaking would only have been present in Bayit Sheni. So here it's talking about Bayit Sheni, probably towards the tail end of Bayit Sheni when this is transpiring. Tana Rabbanan. Arba tzvachot tzavcha azara. There were four cries that the azara cried out. Obviously not literally, but figuratively. Rishona tzumikan bnei eli shetimu eichal Hashem. The first cry that it made is, rid ourselves of the bnei eli who mitamei eichal Hashem. In the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, there the Navi describes exactly what the bnei eli were doing. Over there, it's very unpleasant what they're doing. They were stealing, they were taking from the people who were coming to bring up korbanot. They were sleeping with the women who were coming up. They were taking from the seer, from that meat that was cooked, that didn't belong to them. They were grabbing it out while it was still raw and saying it belongs to us. They were doing very unpleasant things. The Gemara, in other places, plays down what the issues were. It says that it's not literal, but rather figurative. But either way, whatever they were doing was not exemplary behavior, and therefore the Azara says, rid me of Bnei Eli, which is exactly what happens in the beginning of Shmuel Aleph. The Mishkan is destroyed and basically displaces the power of Eli to Shmuel, to the Navi. So it takes it from the Kohanim and grants it to the Navi because now the Mishkan is destroyed. It's interesting over here that it's put together with the other items and says here the Azara, even though one is the Mishkan and the remainder of the items here mentioned are the Mikdash, but it does put them together in one unit.
Possibly because Bnei Eli are viewed as the paradigmatic characters that embody corruption within the Kihuna or problems within the Heichal Hashem, where those that are supposed to be the servants of Hashem are abusing their power and creating a Chilul Hashem instead of a Kiddush Hashem.
Another cry that it had was, Yatzei Mikani Sachar Ishvar Barkai. So another one of the Kohanim, Shemechabedet Et Atzmo Machalel Kodshei Shemayim. He's Mechabed himself, and through that, he profanes the Kodshei Shemayim, Davakorech Yadei Bishirai. He used to cover his hands in silk, Va'avid Avuda. And then he would do the Avoda. As Rashi points out here, you have a problem of Hefsek. Because it says that by the Avoda, V'lakach HaKohen. The Kohen takes it. And we learn from that, L'kach HaKohen means that he has to be in contact with the Kodashim. He wore these silk gloves in his hands because he didn't want to get dirty. He didn't want to become bloodied by the korbanot, so he was giving respect to himself, or he acted with a certain amount of hubris that he had these silk gloves on. But in the meantime, it was posel kodesh shamayim because he wasn't doing lakach hakohen. He did not come into direct contact with the kodoshim, and that's a failure because of a hefsek between his hands and kodoshim. Tosafot over here notes, we'll get back to it in sukkah again because it's important sugya. He says, well, why is that the case? Why is the problem of having something on your hands to grab the kodoshim with? We have a rule that Rava says by lulav, that if you take a handkerchief and you grab the lulav with a handkerchief, that is considered to be fine. That's not a hefsek. That's not something that sits between you and the lulav. Why not? Why isn't that a problem? How come over here all of a sudden having silk gloves on is a hefsek between you and the item? And yet over there by lulav, we do not consider it to be a problem. So with the Re gives an answer which is important. Tahata mari bochez lulav ayde sudar. That he uses the handkerchief to grab the lulav. V'chez b'sudar k'ein tzvat. As if it was like tongs. Gon shekarach alo lulav b'sudar. V'chez b'sudar. He wraps the lulav with the handkerchief and then he uses that to grab the lulav. There, the handkerchief or the item is functioning as a handle to the object. So when it's a handle to the object, then it's not a hefsek. As opposed to over here where the gloves are in his hands, they're not functioning as a handle to the Kodashim. They're protecting his hands, and that's why they're a chatzitza. And Tosafot proves it because Rava there says, when the Gemara there says, be careful about the leaves of the Hadas, or the leaves of the Aravot, they fall off. They're going to be a hefsek between your hand and the lulav. And Rava says over there, no problem, because min b'mino is not a hefsek. Implying that min shebeinu mino would be a hefsek. And it's the same Rava who said before, there's no hefsek between you and the lulav. The answer being that if it's a foreign object that's there, that's just sitting between your hands and the object, like the lulav, problematic. If it's used to functionally carry it, then it's not a problem, and then you're a yotze. But you see that distinction between something that's a handle to the item or used to functionally carry it versus something which simply divides between you and the object. So the problem over here with these silk gloves was that he wasn't carrying the kodshim with his pure hands. And that's what the Gemara says over here, that the Azara is calling out and says, whoa, because of Issachar Ish Kfar Barkai, who's worried about his own honor and doesn't care about the Avodah in the Mikdash. Then there's a third Tzavacha, Vod Tzavacha Azara, Su Sharim Rashechem, that you should open up your gates. Yikaneis Yishmael ben Paichi, Tamido Shal Pinchas. It should enter in Yishmael ben Paichi, who is the student of Pinchas the Kohen Gadol, Vishamesh Bikuna Gadola, and he should be the Kohen Gadol. So obviously over here, it's clear that Yishmael ben Paichi was a kasher, that he was an individual where we're talking positively, despite the fact that before it said, woe to me from Beit Yishmael ben Paichi. That's the distinction I drew before between the individual himself versus the family. Now, the question of whether it was while he was alive or maybe after he passed away, whether his family acted in this manner, what is interesting here is he calls him Tamido Shel Pinchas. He calls him the student of Pinchas. Pinchas in general represents, I would say, a form of anarchy or a lack of structured leadership, because we know that Pinchas acts in the Torah. We meet him in a situation where he acts out of Kiddush Hashem to go and kill Kazmi Batsur and Zimri ben Salul. He takes the law into his own hands. He's basically a zealot, l'shem Hashem. He's chared al dvar Hashem, and he goes and kills them. And the other times that we meet Pinchas are in Sefer Shoftim as well. In Sefer Shoftim, we meet him a couple of times, and once at the end of Sefer Yoshua. In all these cases, there is some sort of problem or anarchy that's going on. And therefore, Pinchas is really associated with that. And it's interesting that it might be here that he's called Tamido Shel Pinchas, because again, Yishmael ben Paichi himself was a kasher, but it seems to be around him, whether it was his family or his offspring, reacting in a manner that was considered to be inappropriate. So he might have been a kasher, but it seems that there was a lot of, whether it was anarchy or lack of proper controls around him. Then it says, the last one is, Od Sabcha Zara, Susharim Rashichem, Yikanes Yochanan ben Narbai. Then should come in Yochanan ben Narbai, Tamidosha Pinkai. He's the student of Pinkai. Not sure, it's not clear who this Pinkai is. I don't know if that's the Greek version of Pinchas or if it's some other kosher Kohen Gadol. He should fill himself with the Kodshei Shemaim. Amru alav, al Yochanan ben Narbai. They said about Yochanan ben Narbai, she'ochel gimel meot agalim, usually 300 calves, v'shotei gimel meot garbe yayin, and he used to drink 300 barrels of wine, v'ochel arbeim sa'ah gozlot v'kinu achsuda. And for dessert, he used to eat 40 sa'ah worth of young birds. So now, generally, when the Gemara uses the term, or the Mishnah uses the term 300, that's a term of exaggeration. It's not an exact number, it just means a large quantity. Rabbi Rashi takes it, interesting, a little more literally, and he says, Shayami gadel beveto kwanim harbe, that he supported large numbers of kwanim, whether they were part of his family or whether he was just generous, but it wasn't he himself who was eating it, it was he and his greater entourage that were eating these items. So Rashi takes it more literally that these were the quantities. They were such large quantities, but large quantities not for him personally, but for him and his whole family, entourage, or whoever else he was supporting. But they say it in a positive way, meaning that he was generous and gave to others. Samru, kol yamav shel Yochanan ben Narbai lo nimtza notar b'migdash. As long as he was alive, there was nothing left over in the Migdash. There were no leftovers. They ate everything that was there. So, my salkabei bisachar ishvar barakai. So where it says, what ended up happening to this Issachar Ish Kfar Barkai who used to wear the silk gloves? So here's the story that appears other places in Shas, which is Amre Malkam u'Malkut Abiyatve. The king and the queen were sitting.
In the Gemara in Kreto, it identifies the king as being Yanai HaMelech of the Chashmonaim dynasty.
Malka Amar G'diayoy. The king said that a kid or goat meat is more delicious, better to eat. Umalkat Amra, the queen said, Imrayoi, lamb is much nicer or better to eat. So question here with regards to Korban HaPesach. Korban HaPesach is brought from the Tzon Ben Shana. It's a one-year-old animal from Tzon. Tzon could either manifest itself as sheep or it could be goats. So a one-year-old sheep or goats is lamb or a kid. So that's basically what their argument and why it's relevant over here is which one of these is more delicious. Amra Uman Muchach. Who's going to be the decider here about the situation? Kohen Gadol, the Kam Masi Karbanot, Koyoma. Kohen Gadol is the perfect individual to ask about this because he's partaking of the Karbanot. He's a large meat eater. We know this from the Mishnayot. The Mishnayot tell us that they used to have a doctor on staff because the Kohanim used to have stomach ailments from the amount of meat that they consumed, that they consumed such large quantities of meat. So over here we know that Kohen Gadol is eating meat all the time. And therefore, he could be the decider here, be the decisive person to tell us which one. Atu Ihu, they brought him in, meaning Issachar Ishvar Bakai, to be the adjudicator of this disagreement between the king and the queen. Achve Biyadei, he waves his hands in a haughty manner and like, of course, Ig Diayoi, if goat or kid is more delicious, Yasik L'Tamida, it should be brought the Tamid. The Tamid, which is the Korban Tamid that's brought every day, it's brought from Kvasim. So if the Gdiim were better, then the Torah would have commanded us to bring the Korban Tamid from a Gdi and not from a Keves. The fact that the Korban Tamid comes from a Keves is indication of the fact that that is more delicious or more important. But he did it in like a dismissive manner, of course. So Amar Malka, the king says, Oh, below Abilei Emta de Malchuta, he doesn't act with fear of the king, which we already know that his behavior was considered to be inappropriate. He's walking around with silk gloves. He thinks of himself as being above the law, has a certain amount of hubris. So when he came and displayed that in front of the king and the king wasn't exactly happy about that. First of all, he acted with that type of haughtiness. Then, in addition to that, he disagreed with the king. Meaning that he picked the side of the queen. Now, picking the side of the queen was bad enough already, but picking the side of the queen and doing it in a haughty manner, that finished him off. So he says, Nifsukula Yamine, cut off his right hand. Because obviously cutting off the right hand was at the end of his career as a Kohen Gadol. Yayiv Shochad, he bribed the executioner, Faske L'Smole, and he took off his left hand instead of his right hand. First of all, in terms of functionality, that preserves his ability to function, but he might have been able to pull it off and still work in the Mikdash, even though he's a Baal Mum now, it was problematic, but nevertheless, maybe he was able to pull it off and stay in the position of Kohen Gadol. Shama Malka, king gets wind of it, that he bribed the executioner, Upasko the Yemine, and he cut off the right hand as well. So he lost both hands out of the deal. Amar Rav Yosef, Brich Rachmana, the Ashkele Lisacha Yishkvar Barkai, the Mitzvah. So Baruch Hashem, that he got his fate paid by Hayama in this world. So the Mitzvah means Mulo, the end game, or his fate came out. His payback was done in this world because he acted with that hubris with wearing the silk gloves in the Mikdash and his Mavazik on Shem Shemayim. In the end, he got Midah Kameged Midah. His hands were cut off because of the way that he behaved in front of the king. Amar Ravashi, Yisachar Ishkvar Barkai, Lotana Matzniten, he didn't learn Mishnah. That's none. We have a Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kvasim Kodmim Leizim B'chol Makom. Whenever the Torah wants to mention the use of animals, that you have an option to use kvasim or izim, the kvasim are always mentioned first. So, you know, beginning of Vayikra, when you're talking about the Olah, so in terms of the order of the Olah, it talks about a keves first, and then it talks about an aiz after that. So the order is always keves, then aiz. Yochom ipneshim uvcharim b'minam. You would think that's because the keves precedes the aiz, because that was the better option. That's the primary option. Tamalomar im keves yavi karbano. That when it comes to the Korban HaChatat in Parshat Vayikra, there by the Korban HaChatat is the opposite order, which is, Im Keves Yavi Karbano is already the second option in the Korban HaChatat. The first option was the Eiz, then the second option is the Keves Yavi Karbano, Lameid Sheshnehem Shkulim Keachad. So it teaches you that they're both equal, because in every other place it goes in the opposite order, and then all of a sudden here in the Chatat it reverses the order. Why does it reverse the order over here? To teach you that they're indifferent. We're indifferent between an Aiz and a Kevis. It just has to be practically, we have to put one before the other. But that doesn't mean that one's more important than the other. So, Rav Ashi says over here, obviously, Yisachar Ishvar Barkai, who was a Kohen Gadol, was not learned, and didn't know Mishnayot, because if he had known the Mishnayot, he wouldn't have answered that way to the king and the queen, because the truth is that the Torah has no preference with regards to Kevis or Aiz between goats and sheep. Ravina Amar, afilu mikra no milo kara. He didn't even learn the Torah. He didn't know psukim, dichtiv. Im keves, im eiz. By the Parban, it says im keves and then im eiz. Ibai keves laite, ibai eiz laite. And the Torah gives you equal options when it comes to the shlamim. It says im keves, im eiz. It says if you want, you bring a keves. If you want, you bring an eiz. So here again, a keves does precede A's, but it gives them as equal options. It doesn't say, bring a keves, and if you don't have a keves, bring an A's. But it says, rather, if you want, bring a keves. If you want, bring an A's. It shows them as equal options to the individual to bring a shlamim, and shows no preference between either of them. So, ibay keves laiti, ibay A's laiti. If you want so, you can bring a sheep. If you want so, you can bring a goat. So that's the point, being that even psukim don't seem to indicate a preference, don't seem to indicate that one is better than the other. And therefore, how could Zachar Ishkvar Barkai conclude from the fact that the garment tabit comes from a keves, that meant that it was preferential in some way according to the Torah or Min HaShamayim? And so they're saying that even though he seemed to be learned and his answer was premised on the Torah, the truth is that he doesn't really have support for that Min HaTorah. Torah doesn't really give an indication of preference. And therefore, again, Midah Keneged Midah, he was punished for his behavior. Okay, we'll stop over here with the end of the fourth parak. And tomorrow we'll begin with the Tamid Shenishkat, which is basically now the next five parakim from the fifth parak through the ninth parak. Deal with the Korban HaPesach, the Korban Pesach and Pesach Rishon, and then in the ninth parak they deal with Pesach Sheni. Again, this is based on what I mentioned before, the progress through the day of Erev Pesach through to the night of Pesach. This is the progression. We're now in the afternoon of Pesach. We just dealt with the morning of Erev Pesach, which was whether it's an Isur Malacha or not an Isur Malacha. Now we move to the afternoon of Erev Pesach, which is we're going to deal with the Korbanot, or the Korban HaPesach, which is the afternoon of Pesach. And the last thing that we'll do in the 10th parak is the night of the Seder night, which will be the final stage of the Gemara Pesachim. But this really takes us into Kodashim. It's the area of Pesachim that's skipped by all the yeshivot, because it's really poor sugyot from Kodashim. Back in the first parak, we had our little look into Tarot, and now for the next five parakim, we're really going to be involved or deeply involved inside the world of Kodashim.